so I don't want to brag too much. Well, too much more than usual, but I've been around, you know, the bases a couple times. I know we have some younger listeners, so I'm going to throw out a bit of advice. Joe, do you know the best way, the absolute best way to get your woman to yell in bed?
What is that?
Call her by the wrong name. Call her by the wrong name. Hey, this is Jacques.
This is Joe.
And welcome to Carnival Personnel. Joseph, how was your Father's Day?
I don't care.
That's actually how I woke up that morning.
Right, exactly. I don't care. Is it wrong that all I want for Father's Day is for my family to leave me the fuck alone?
No, because I think that's what Mother's Day is all about. I think if you get right down to it, most mothers would say, just leave me the fuck alone for right. One day.
Right, and you do. But on your day, they want to do something as a family. Well, find a family that wants you to do something together and go spend it with them.
Well, if you weren't ignoring them the other 364 days of the year.
Fair enough. Anyways, before we dive in, we start right off the top. The sideshow this past week was absolutely, absolutely a lot of fun.
It was epic. I loved it. It was the Warner Brothers cartoons episode. We spoke for, I think, 3 days. I was able to edit it down to about an hour and a half. And it came out, I think, very well. I think Peter, our guest that week, was very insightful.
I had said that when I forwarded on the Twitter, that it's like, hey, here's a Carnival Personnel sideshow with actual facts that are facts based on facts, mostly because those facts came from somebody who knew what the fuck they were talking about.
Unfortunately, Twitter filtered out the word facts, so nobody saw it.
But it was a lot of fun. And yeah.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you so much. And seriously, when you looked at like the clock and we're like, oh my God, we were almost hitting 2 hours and we could have sat here for like another.
We were losing light.
and I did it. It's like I thank Peter for being here for his first of many podcasts. And you know, we talked about doing some other ones. Like, he's a big Muppet fan. Do you remember his YouTube page off the top of your head?
It's Zingcat. It's him and his partner, Patrick. It's a puppet-based YouTube channel, and it's Xingcat on YouTube.
But so, you know, I would check that out, and I'm looking forward to, you know, Peter coming back a number of times, because we're wrapping it up, and you're like, oh crap, we did all these cartoons, but we never even got into those cartoon type thing.
And Peter, by the way, if you're listening, which you're probably not, but if you are listening, you are now our official Paul Lynde, not because of anything else besides the fact that you can do Paul Lynde better than anybody that I know.
I thought you did a pretty good Paul Lynde, but yeah, so that means when he comes here, he will do the entire show as Paul Lynde, and you are now Charles Nelson Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
That is the dream. That, like, literally, that is like, you know, when you have those, you know, those
epic rap battles
or those, like, you know, if Captain America fought Batman type, you
right,
know, things,
right.
And
yeah,
stuff like.
Right. Can Spider-Man beat Mighty Mouse? That type of thing. But yes, on with our awful show.
Okay. So we talked about, like, you know, how much I love racism, especially when it hits home. And it's funny because you end up, like, I don't know if it was a tweet that you replied to something in or that you had texted me this week. It's like, you know, oh, because I'm married to an Asian, I can use the Y word, you know, which I liked very much.
Yeah, the Y word for Asians. You figure that out. We're not going to explain it to you here.
So speaking of Y words, we're going to start off on a positive note. And gosh, I'm trying to think. Oh, another former guest, our friend Rich, the co-creator of Mike Judge's Tales from the Tour Bus on Showtime. Rich has created a bunch of other shows, been a couple pretty big band, like platinum album worthy bands and stuff. But he was a guest. And where did he really go off the rails with us when he was talking about, like, comparing, what was it?
Was it Dutch porn or Dutch something Dutch. Like, was it Danish porn, yeah, or Dutch
when
porn?
When you're doing meth, watching Dutch porn in Finland. And
I think it was cocaine, but we're splitting hairs here.
Right. And
guess which hairs we're splitting.
But he sends me this video this week, texts me a video, and it's of an 8-year-old girl in Japan playing Led Zeppelin's Good Time, Bad Time, which honestly, and 95, 94, the height of drumming, when I was literally playing a few hours a day, five or six days a week, depending on, you know, our show schedules and stuff like that. I couldn't, and I'm not kidding, I couldn't do a third of what this girl's doing. I mean, it's one of the more challenging John Bonham songs. Uh-huh. And she has the biggest smile on her face. And there was a camera and camera type thing where it was just isolated on her foot. And she does have a double bass drum pedal, but she was doing it with just one foot. She was basically doing a double bass rhythm with just her one foot. And I ended up sending this to Joe and a bunch of other people. And, you know, one of my friends, my buddy Dennis, who was the drummer in the 90s of a very successful band called the X-Z's. He's an executive over at Universal. And he's like, yeah, she's better than I ever was. It's like, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? And he's like, and look, I don't believe in the being, but I am starting to believe in divine intervention. Like, there's, I mean, when you see this, and then so of course I send it to, you know, there's a group text, and I send it to the FNH guys, and Biff, not in a one-upping way, goes, oh, that's pretty amazing. Check out this, another video of another different 8-year-old. Japanese girl doing a speed metal, like same thing, playing this absolute. And the thing is, not only is she just sitting there playing this speed metal, you know, song, speed death metal song, couldn't look more adorable and couldn't look more like honestly, it's like surrounded by unicorns and rainbows.
Yeah, like J-pop meets My Little Pony meets Metallica.
But that she had that look and vibe of that, but she's actually playing. And you know, the people who wrote it, like, hadn't seen the sun in like 4 years. Like, everything is black in their world. And here's this shiny. And I did. I fell down the rabbit hole of watching, you know, and it's like, oh, here's this 6-year-old girl here doing it. Then I'm like, am I popping up on some Homeland Security? I mean, how many of these?
All right. 8-year-olds beating the drums.
You know, and then later in the day, on a completely other side of the spectrum, I was trying to watch something on YouTube, and it was one of those you had to sit through the whole commercial thing. You couldn't fast forward, you know.
Not me, because I subscribe to YouTube Red for now.
You would. Yeah, exactly. Until the subscription runs out at the end.
Don't judge me. Okay, judge.
And I had to watch an entire – didn't have to watch. I could have clicked out. I wasn't Clockwork Orange strapped to a chair with my eyes being like forced open. A Kid Bop commercial.
You mean Kids Bop
with a Z, because it's street. Anyways, I want to run for office. I don't care which party lets me run on their ticket. My only goal in life is to make it legal to punch every kid associated with Kid Bop in the face. I know it might not be the most popular thing, but hey, you know what? I'll expand the base. I'll let it include any kid associated with Cars for Kids commercials. But I mean it. It's like I'm listening to these kids, and they're singing, you know, crap anyways, and I'm just like, oh my god, it's like I could never work on that set without walking over and punching each one of the kids in the face. Usually when you see a little douchebag do something, you're like, oh my god, I'm going to walk right over and punch your mother in the neck.
But they could be the next Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears, or okay, I'm not making anything against your case here, but
go on. Yeah, I'm not selling down much. And so as I'm putting this script together, and I keep meaning to put this on.
Wait, we have a script?
The rundown. I keep meaning to put this on the rundown. As you know, my youngest guy decided to play baseball. His first at bat, and he's played like 10 games now, his first at bat was a base hit. And it truly went 3, maybe 4 inches in front of home plate, you know, and the other little kid playing catcher had no idea what to do. It was one of those things. He's played, like I said, 10 games since then. That's his only hit. Like, literally his first at bat, he should have walked away, you know, a winner.
Lou Gehrig style, like.
Right. Today. Anyways, It's nice. It's like it's other parents. It's not when we grew up and parents being awful from the stands. I mean, it's come a long way from that. It's one of the reasons I didn't want to get the little guys in organized sports because, you know, parents, kids suck and parents suck even more. But it's nice and it's competitive, but they have, you know, it's not over the top. Anyways, I don't know if one of the kids on his team kind of has some challenges. I don't know the right way to say it. The entire time, whoever is at bat, it's not like, you know, let's go, Billy. And then he lets it go. It's the an infinite at bat takes about 7 or 8 minutes because they usually take about 7 or 8 minutes. He won't stop. And then the next kid, and it's like, it's great that he's supportive. Nobody else on the team kind of gets in on the chant with them. And after the first, like, 3 or 4 batters, you're just like, oh, my God, seriously, kid, shut it. Like this, nobody wants to be here. You know what I mean? This isn't enjoyable for any of us. You are making excruciating. Now, I don't know if I'm going to throw him in the, you know, Kid Bop, Cars for Kids legislation. I'm going to try to get past where you can legally punch them. But somebody's got to do something.
I know what you can do. Then at the next game, pull out your tape recorder, record him chanting. We auto-tune that bitch, and we make money off his ass.
That's why. See, Joe is the sexy and the smart one.
I'm the brains and the brawn.
Hello. Okay, let's stop talking about punching children.
Mm-hmm.
Me. And start talking about Russian smiling. Because when you think of Mother Russia, you think...
Icy cold winter.
You think smiles!
Oh, sorry.
Smiles. So I was actually... I heard this. I'm like, no, that's got to be an Onion thing. Because the World Cup has started this past week in Russia. And they've had some kind of self-awareness where they're like, oh, we come across as cold, icy, frigid people. All-Star Tommy's wife falls into none of those categories with her Russian heritage. But seriously, they had a big initiative to teach people. Like, not like, hey, Joe, you should smile more. But actually, the people working the venues, the people working public transportation, like all the handlers associated with the World Cup, because they're like, yeah, we look awful and stoic and we haven't got over of like the winter of 45 yet.
Smile, Ivan, smile.
So, you know, and that was interesting. There was talking to some Russian people and listening to a couple interviews and I was reading about it. And they're like, no, we know we don't smile, but we think people in the West, especially Americans, smile too much. What are you up to? You don't know me. Why are you smiling at me? You know, what kind of con is going here? So we save our smiles for when we have something to smile about. But
like when the United States turns in on itself and elects a doofus president that bows to dictators and people like Vladimir Putin, that make you smile? Darn you!
No. But I will, you know, I will say when Kim Jong-un speaks, his people sit up and listen. My people should do that too.
Yeah.
I'm quoting. I'm actually quoting from him. And it's like.
From whom?
Yeah. I can't say Donnie Two Scoops. But before we get into that much of the awfulness, happy 40th weird anniversary. You know, I'm not a big fan. Like, I love early punk. It's one of my lifelines. The Cramps, who were a great band, and they're lumped into one of the founding of like of the American punk movement in the 70s, but they were more what is termed as like psychobilly, like rockabilly meets psychedelic, but in between that there wasn't really a category to put it in, so it kind of got thrown in the punk thing. But 40 years ago, this past Thursday, and there's very little footage of it, but thank God there is actually footage of it. There was a God. They played a legitimate Arkham Asylum straitjacket mental institution. And it wasn't a gimmick or a gag, you know, type thing. I don't know how it got put together. Like, you know, the singer's not around. You know, this was pre-smartphones. It was pre-video recorders. But some local company basically, you know, had a 16-millimeter film rolling for 20 minutes of the hour set. I encourage you to watch it because it's it's the Cramps playing a mental institution in Napa, California in 1978.
I think you just gave Jeff Ross a new place for his roasts. You know, like he started with a prison and then he tried to do the Boston police and yeah, maybe he'll do mental institution.
But you know, a groundbreaking.
Okay, the Cramps. I thought you were going to refer to the hit movie by Eddie Murphy, but then I remembered that that was the Clumps and not the Cramps 2-3 Walk.
And was right it in. was it a hit movie?
I think so. Okay. I think there was a sequel to The Clumps.
Okay.
Or The Clumps was a spinoff of Nutty Professor.
That's what it was. Yes. Right. Thank you. Okay. Nutty Professor.
Hit.
Big hit.
Right.
Big hit.
By the way, speaking of Nutty Professor, sidebar, Weird Al Yankovic just finished his recent tour where he played nothing but his originals and then a couple of, like a sprinkling of his parodies and medleys. But at the end.
What was the tour called?
The Ridiculously Self-Indulgent, Ill-Advised Vanity Tour. Something like that. I'm jumbling the words up. But one of his first stops was in Boston. I got to go see it with my family. It was great. He was awesome. And at the end, he came out for an encore and with a band, obviously. And then they played a cover of Doo-Wah Diddy. There she was just a-walking down the street singing Doo-Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Doo. Yeah, exactly.
Shuffling. Now I'm going to have to go
singing
into a strike.
Singing Doo-Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Doo. She looked good, I think. So what I'm getting at is that, what was I getting? Oh.
His covers.
Yeah, they hit the covers. So at the end of every show in every city, and actually twice in Boston, he also, that night he did two shows. The second show he did Dirty Water. He recorded a different cover every night in every stop of his tour. And then on YouTube, he posted a medley of 26 minutes of all of the 77 covers that he did. And one of them is Foxy Lady by the Jerry Hendrix Experience. Foxy Lady!
That is fantastic.
Yeah. You know she's a hot maven legging. and he, fucking rock god. Like, this guy has a range like you wouldn't believe. Like, and gravelly, too. Like, his voice gets down and, like, kind of, you know, grungy. But I can't imagine how he does that every night and not lose his voice. Like, he's...
He is. He's like, you know, Rich Little meets Bono.
Yeah.
You
know? I mean, and it's all great, and it's fantastic. And I say, if you have 26 minutes of life that you just don't give a shit about, watch this video. But... I digress.
But I did ask, you know, he did 77 songs, but a bitch ain't one. No, sorry. but he doesn't do Paul Lynde's Kids.
I guess he just doesn't have the love of Paul Lynde as much as we do. Although he did do a whole song about Charles Nelson Reilly. I just want to point that out.
You're not kidding.
No, it's called CNR, and it's actually like a White Stripes style parody. Check that out.
That I actually will, and
I'll play it for you after the show.
Or we'll go out on it. I won't bore everybody because I know I've told it on this before. But when I first moved to LA, and the show that I was doing here with Lexington, we got picked up to do out there. Just revamped it a little bit, and because our band had just had a big article written in Billboard, I had some people, you know, in the media that I could call. And the girl from Billboard wrote a little article about my new show out there. And we didn't have a host yet, and I don't know what they made me say it, but, you know, it was a restaurant bar that she was interviewing just two doors down from the place that you worked in L.A. And I was just being funny, had a few beers, and she was, like, laughing. And when we got to, oh, blah, 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 is there going to be a host? I don't know why I said Charles Nelson Reilly. I just threw that out there. But then the people who had brought me out and was paying for the show, when Billboard comes out, they're all excited. It's like, oh, my God, I didn't know you had a Billboard hookup. This is great. This is great. And then the Billboard comes out, and they're like, well, why are we going to back you if you're not taking things seriously? And I looked him in the eyes and I said, how dare you besmirch the good name of Charles Nelson Reilly, who I then literally had to track down. And at the time, he was doing some like local theater thing in like Miami and stuff like that. But
and you had to ask his permission or something?
Yes, exactly. Like to actually say, no, we're actually talking about getting him on the show. So I had to go through all this subterfuge to actually try to set up a meeting. With-
Sorry, I'm recording a Lidsville documentary right now. Mm-hmm.
Joe, other than an immediate family member or being put to rest, getting ready to do the dirt nap or wedding, you're not a church guy.
Nope.
Myself.
Big church guy.
Big church
all
guy.
Church all the time.
Everyone. I don't care what kind of church it is.
Right.
You know? But I do. You know, I've known a couple things. You know, my sister is more of a church-going person in a really progressive Protestant-type church. But the pastor, she's gay and all that stuff. So it's one of those, hey, you know, you're not good, not a fire and brimstone.
It's not Unitarian. It's more, but it is a Protestant church. Whatever. Who the fuck cares? It's religion. It's all fake. Sorry.
No,
it's not all fake.
But you've heard Bible passages and stuff like that. I mean, you're not completely ignorant to it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been confirmed. No, have I been confirmed? No, I'm not a confirmed Catholic. But I did do communion. I went to Sunday school. I've had the fear of God beaten into me once or twice as a lad. What about it?
Do you remember the Bible passages about ripping children from mothers and putting them in cages in warehouses and abandoned Walmarts? Because I don't – is that Old Testament, New Testament? Where is
– I think that was Testament 1.5. It's kind of like in between. It was more of like an index page.
Well, you know the Mormons, it's like they believe, oh, we found the lost third book of the Bible that the rest of you fucks don't know about.
You have to see the Book of Mormon somehow, some way.
I will.
Oh, my God, it's so good. There's a whole song about the Joseph Smith thing and how he found the golden plates, and it's fucking fantastic. Anyways, don't get me so excited in the middle of this podcast.
So,
anyways, what are we trying to talk about here?
We're trying to talk about, like, the U.S., you know, comedy show. Let's talk about small children being ripped away from their mothers at the border. Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions has justified in the book and the Bible in which he basically said this is why it's okay. First of all, if you're a political person or a judge, I literally think you should be disbarred, thrown out of office, thrown off the bench. If any time you cite your findings, your rulings, or a law being based on religious texts. I mean, all the flag wavers out there who, you know, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the forefathers, those are the people who made it really fucking crystal clear. Church is over here. State is over here. Church is way over here, and the state's way over here. But those are the people who used Christianity as a weapon, and now they're using it. And of course, you know, Huckleberry Sanders, she, you know, backs it up on this and got called out. And what is tragic about the quote that Sessions used, that book in the Bible was the same passages that they were using to justify keeping slaves.
Ah.
But if you read to the end of that book, because I actually talked to my sister about it. I'm like, you know, same kind of setup and joke. It's like, hey, what did it say? And she says, oh, but people know that book particularly because that's the one that says it ends on the love thy neighbor. Everybody's your neighbor. Mm-hmm. I mean, but if you want to cherry pick this line or this line, you know, out, you know, from here and there and weaponize it. But that's and this is why I'm not into religion, and this is why I can't really believe in a God. You're saying your God is saying breastfeeding children, it's okay to rip them away from their moms, literally put them in crates. Now, I will come clean. I've already copped to this. I will post this on Twitter. I was way ahead of the bell curve on caging children in dog crates. My oldest one, because I was texting with, you know, a couple F&H guys today, and I remember, there was an old picture, a great picture of our oldest when he's a year, he's 10 months, he's 14 months, he's in that window. We couldn't keep him out of the dog crate. We, like, could never keep him out of the dog crate. So I was way ahead of the curve on that one.
Speaking of the Mormon Bible, I think there's a passage in there that says you can tie your dog to the roof of your car.
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, that's clear. Clear as day. He likes it up there.
Yes.
He like that's the
breeze.
Right.
Yep. The sun shining on his fur as it leaves his body because they're going 100 miles an hour.
He probably kept up with you the first mile or so. No, that is pretty great. But
man, I'm so bored with this podcast. Is there anything else we can talk about?
Yeah, let's go with a joke, right?
Yeah.
A pimp, a Nazi. And what do you call it? I know it's pedophilia, but what is somebody who's a...
A pedophile?
Pedophile, thank you.
Pedophile.
A pedophile. I like to call him Nick. But a pedophile, a Nazi, and a pimp walk into a bar. And they come out winners of GOP primaries around the country.
Oh.
Truly, and if, I don't know if you followed this, but one of the leaders, one of the guys who was out in front of center with his tiki torch at Charlottesville, he just won a state primary to be on the ticket as a Republican, a very prominent, probably the most prominent legal pimp in the country, the guy who owns, you know, a place in Nevada where it's legal, just won a primary. And so did a guy who honestly not only says, like, you know, pedophilia should be a choice, but incest should be as well. This is your GOP, not your GOP. I'm not pointing at you. This is the GOP.
Yep, and Dennis Hoff is the pimp. Yeah,
right.
I know who Dennis Hoff is too. But, yeah,
no, I mean, that, right. He's not like coming out of the shadows after hiding.
No,
for
and by
years.
The way, he's a legal pimp. Let's just put it out there. It's all in Nevada. It's all above board. He's a very nice guy.
And as you know, pimping ain't easy.
No,
you know,
no. But I did not see that coming. That is the fascist way to become a... Oh, damn it, I dropped the ball. I fumbled it on the end zone.
Try it again.
No, I have nothing. I just wanted to...
Seriously, this is the Family Values Party. This is the one that impeached Bill Clinton, that said Hillary wasn't worthy of running because she stood by Bill during his infidelities. And you look at who is at the top of the ticket, you go down that, but you go downstream. I mean, and the same thing, Roy Moore. I mean, this was just a few months ago. This is who these people are.
Yeah. What do you want to do about this? We know.
I know
these are, like,
they're off.
Is there anybody out there, is there anybody listening that doesn't know that the GOP is full of assholes, is comprised completely, 100% of assholes? Like, are we turning any heads here? Are we shining any lights on anything? I know this is just saving... Basically, this is a cost-saving measure of this podcast. Jacques doesn't have to go pay for a psychiatrist. And he can just vent all of the shit that he absorbs on Twitter and Rachel Maddow and the world and the news and just spew it out onto me. Yes.
Well, that's what the screen guard's for.
Exactly, right. Seriously, that and the candy.
And the snacks. But, well, let's talk about something happy. Tell me something good that happened today.
I don't know. I can't see.
I would say Paul Manafort going to jail.
Oh, God, yes. Yes. Paul Manafort, the guy who was, what, he ran the campaign or something?
I forget who he is now. So Paul Manafort... was, and this is the weirdest thing, came out of nowhere. Like, he was an old, you know, GOP operative. He worked in other administrations on lower levels. But honestly, for 10 years, he was the guy behind the guy in the Ukraine. And he was paid, like, it was something crazy, like $10 million a year to help his PR image around the world. This is a, like, basically a Stalinist, Putin disciple dictator running the Ukraine. And Paul Manafort's very shady business all dealt with Russian oligarchs. Out of the blue, one day he gets presented to Trump, who had no relationship with beforehand, and hired him because of all his oligarch connections and because Paul Manafort said, I'm not looking for a job. I will do this for free. Now, on one hand, he was only his campaign manager for about 2 solid months, like the guy. But it was leading up to the convention and right after the convention. So, yeah, so, okay, so you were only there for 2 months, but you were the one, and nobody knows why he picked Mike Pence. Paul Manafort handpicked Mike Pence. And the big thing, if you go back, and it's not me being the liberal Alex Jones with crazy conspiracy theories, there was a
lizard people.
there was this big thing where the Republicans, you know, the Republicans, the Democrats, all parties, the libertarians, they all have their platforms. And at the conventions, they release, this is our official platform. And absolutely the only change that the Trump administration wanted to change, the only change, but they fought for it tooth and nail. It's like, yep, we will go along with everything that you guys want us to go along with 100%, except we want to relax sanctions on Russia. There was a couple Russian things in the platform because up until a couple years ago, the Republican Party, just like Rocky IV, looked at the Russians as the bad guy. Whether it be Red Dawn, Rocky IV.
the classics.
Boris and Natasha. You know, you go down the list. Up until about 18 months ago, the Russians were the bad guy. So when Blotus today, you know, he said, oh, Michael Cohen, barely knew him. Oh, Paul Manafort, barely knew him. He was only with our administration a small time. Yes, but during the most important part of the campaign.
He only lit one match.
Except happened to be standing next to a gas station when it happened. But hey, you have your side of the story. I have the smoldering fume ashes of what used to be our democracy. And so like I was saying to Joe earlier, it's like usually I'll do a rundown and send it to a rep pass on Wednesday or Thursday. But I'm like, yeah, I know he has court coming up on Friday. That might change a few things. And I love that the judge said, because whether you've been following this that closely or not, he's been arraigned in two different states. Both states have house arrest bracelets on him. Like he has, he does. He has two anklets, one on each foot, had to surrender his passport. Well, he was witness tampering using what he thought was an encrypted, you know, on his phone.
Oh, like a WhatsApp?
Like a WhatsApp. But it's like, and so the judge said, look, I don't have a choice. This isn't junior high and I could just take your cell phone away. You're under house arrest. You have two ankle bracelets on, and you signed something saying you wouldn't commit any more crimes if you were out. So now he's going to be in jail pending trial. But of course, you know.
Pending trial and bending over.
Oh! That's when, like I said, you know, white collar criminal, maybe he's not really, you know, set out for prison, and he's in the jail with his big neck tattoo, really big, mean neck tattoo guy. And lights out the first night, and he's like, Manafort, you want to play a game? No, I'm all good. I'm all set. You were going to play a game? Okay, I'll play a game. It's called Husband and Wife. Now, do you want to be the husband, or do you want to be the wife? Well, Manafort's not an idiot. It's like, it's okay with you, sir. I'd rather be the husband. Great. This is the part of the game where the husband comes over and sucks the wife's cock. You follow the summit this week? You were all about the summit. Did you get your coin yet? You bought the coins off the website. They're only going to go up in value, like I told you. They're like stamps.
For those who meet North Korean generals, we salute you.
Worst K-pop version of an AC/DC song ever. Ever. I don't even want to talk about it. Do we have to talk about it?
Nope.
Okay, good. It happened.
I got a nice shiny whistle right here.
There you go. It happened. It was awful. We're praising. We as a nation are praising a dictator. And again, he might be coming to the White House for a visit. Philadelphia Eagles, not so fast. Mm-hmm. You know, Golden State Warriors, not so fast. But
have you seen those Eagles fans, though? They are assholes.
I don't think the Eagle fans were being invited to the White House. You know,
that's right.
I just think, I mean, you know, okay. It's like, all right, you know, fair enough.
Fair enough.
So, and we'll just skip. The AG report finally came out. 500 pages basically saying Comey fucked up twice really bad. And he fucked up because he went public. It wasn't that. When they said, oh, there's nothing here to the Hillary email scandal, we're closing the investigation, they had decided that. But they just didn't clear him to make the announcement publicly. And then a few months later, they didn't clear him to say, oh, we're going to reopen the investigation. And then out of like the 500 pages and the tens and tens of thousands of documents and text messages back and forth, the you and me working the FBI basically had a text exchange saying, oh, I hate him. And you're like, yeah. No way he can become president. And it's like, literally there's a million pieces of data saying, yep, the FBI fucked Hillary over. And it turned, like you said, why don't you tell us about Comey's email habits?
Oh, yeah. Comey, I guess, used a private Gmail account to do government work, which
Lock him up.
Write a book. Go on tour.
Right. And Private Citizen had a great three-word response to that.
Hillary Clinton tweeted, "But my emails." You see, because of the thing with the lady.
And now, before we get to the defunct sponsor of the week, I said last week when Joe sent me the full video of last week's defunct sponsor of the week, the greatest racist commercial ever. And I said to Joe when he sent it, if you listen to it, go back and listen to it. But I am going to put it on Twitter. But what I love is I said to Joe, if Comedy Central called us and gave us an unlimited amount of money and said, we want you to have a show and we want you to make a parody, awful, racist breakfast cereal commercial. Unlimited budget, you can have any actor you want, go. Would you be able to come up with anything half as awful as that?
No, twice as awful.
So the bar's raised. I don't know if we're going down the same route. I don't know who the sales department brought in this week to bring us the cold hard cash. But without further ado,
it's our defunct sponsor of the week.
Some fun when Snubby Gunn plays Private Eye, and you can have the same kind of fun with Mattel's Tommy Burst Detective Set. The Tommy Burst has automatic bolt action. Fire off a burst of 10 shots. Pull the bolt again, you're reloaded. Or fire single shots like a rifle. The Tommy Burst alone is $3. In the Detective Set, you also get the Snub Nose 38 and Snap Draw Shoulder Holster. The pistol fires greeny stick'em caps and shoots safe shooting shells. You can tell it's Mattel. It's swell.
That's good sponsorship.
So, getting into sport, Joe, we mentioned at the beginning with the Russian smiling World Cup. Thoughts?
It's a sporting event. In Russia.
Who is the biggest, best soccer player in the world currently?
Is it Ronaldo?
And where is Ronaldo from?
Oh, my home country of Portuguese land.
And I was at my sister's house, again, having my little Bible study. But my brother-in-law, who's from Colombia, and he's like, oh. He goes, he came home, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch, the football. I mean, you mean soccer. And he started laughing. And I'm like, you had about a half hour. I'm like, oh, what are you going to watch? He's like, oh, because he tapes everything. It's like, it's Portugal and Spain. And he's like, Ronaldo, who is Portuguese, plays for Real Madrid in Spain. So it's kind of, it's one of those things. It's bittersweet. Like, Spain wants Ronaldo to do well, except maybe not so much against them. And I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, this is great. And then he starts playing it. And I'm like, oh, fuck. See, he records all the World Cup games on Telemundo. No. because he speaks that non-English.
You know what's funny? When you say that Ronaldo, who's Portuguese, plays for a Spanish team, I quickly thought of my friend's dad, who thought I was Spanish, and then my friend had to explain to him, no, he's Portuguese, to which he responded, same thing. So it's like,
No, but somebody here speaks Chinese. Wait, is it Mandarin? Yeah, it's still not Korean.
Right. Yeah, a little callback to last week.
But we beat you in the war, right? I mean, we're 11-1. You can throw that out there and pretty much have a good chance that.
Yep. So, hey, I don't know. I don't really care about the. All I know is that the U.S. didn't qualify. So.
Yeah, and I guess they, and this is going back like 6-8 months. And that's the worst thing. It's not like they didn't qualify the week before. You knew you weren't going to be in it.
Putin couldn't pull some strings for a bro. It's just like, what happened to we scratch your back, you scratch ours?
Well, they did. They tried. They like, okay. Your last chance to qualify, we're basically going to have you play against, Our Ladies of the Wooden Leg Nuns of Uruguay. And it should have been like a 5-0, 6-0 layup, Yeah, they tied and didn't qualify. And it's like, they tried. The world, because at the end of the day, this is the biggest sporting event every 4 years. I mean, the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl, but, we have four of those in between, your little World Cup. So it's a huge deal. But they want the U.S. to have some rooting interest.
But luckily for the World Cup, the U.S. is full of immigrants anyway. So
for now. For now.
Fiend.
So on the other thing, and I'm gonna give him a shout out. Our good friend, you know, Price is Right, my buddy who I work with. The dude watches every sporting event there is. And I mean every sporting event. And so we have a meeting, huge Capitals fan. He was really bummed he couldn't get down.
Wow. My headphones are not working so well. Did you pronounce
Capitals?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I did. My bad. Can you edit that out? But so he was bummed. But then I was talking to him, and he didn't want to come to our meeting this week. And he's like, or he didn't want to have to, you know, do something because he had the whole morning planned from like 7 a.m. to 11 to watch three different World Cup games. Oh, but at the same time, I was texting him like earlier, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm just watching some golf thing. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. This kid, I mean, he played in an Orange Bowl. He was a Division I NCAA college, you know, wide receiver. He played arena football professionally, and now he's working in this. Loves soccer, loves hockey, loves basketball. What do you think his favorite sport is? Now I think he's from the D.C. area originally, but what do you think his favorite sport is?
I'm going to say that he's an asshole and likes cricket.
He likes cricket! He likes cricket! I'm dead serious! He literally, it is his favorite thing. And it's like, he brought it up in a meeting a little while ago. It's like, yeah, and I was watching cricket. I'm like, and it's like, until it circled around again, and I told him, it's like, oh my God, because when we were in Qatar, like Friday mornings, like the vacant lots, like lots of vacant lots, you would see all the Indians or Pakis, like, getting together and playing cricket. And it's 6 in the morning because you can't play past 10 a.m. But on Friday, which is the holy day, the world shuts down over there. And you'd see dozens and dozens, like pick up basketball or something anywhere else, pick up cricket. And the boys asked, it's like, what's cricket? And I don't know the nuances. I just know what I know. And I told them, it's like baseball, but slower and more boring, you know? And Mr. Price has said, I'm going to straighten this out. But literally, it's like, yeah, we had a meeting with somebody, our Nessun contact, and he's like, look, I can do something with 11 Sport, which is a national sport network, but on the JV level. It covers different sports, you know, like cricket, you know, and it would be great for arena football. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I watch cricket on 11 Sports. And I kind of thought he was maybe joking or maybe heard about it. But literally, I swear to God, if anybody knows Mr. Price, it's like, I did not prep you to say that. He loves cricket. Now,
I see cricket as sort of like baseball if the bat were too heavy to pick up. It's like, I can't pick it up. It's like, right.
Yeah, and there's no – I don't think you run bases. What do you know about cricket?
Well, you got the mallet, and then you got those rings, and then there's the ball. No, wait, that's croquet. I'm sorry. Cricket is like baseball, but you wear much more dapper clothing. I think high socks that you see are part of the game. I think it's primarily played by men, which is, you know, one of the more redeeming qualities.
There you go.
See? I was joking, of course. But actually, I mean, are there female cricket?
No idea.
Yeah. Nor because you don't care.
I don't.
Although I will say my fantasy cricket team is killing it this year.
I bet there is. I bet there's betting, and all sports have to have betting and stuff like
that. The only thing I know about cricket is when I do my stand-up. Cricket.
And then you're sick. And now your favorite part, and I believe, you know, a few other people's favorite part of the sport segment on Carnival Personnel this week.
In USFL history?
Thank you.
Yay.
This week in USFL history, the city of San Diego said thank you, but no thank you to a franchise.
Wow.
Yes.
They just threw all that money right out the window.
They really did. That cold, hard cash. Citing that, like, they had at the time, there was a professional soccer long before the MLS. You know, they were trying to have professional soccer here who shared a stadium, you know, with the baseball team, the Padres. And they're like, no, it will ruin the field. Like, we don't want to have our field ruined. And at the same time, the San Diego Chargers said, yeah, no, it's fine. If you guys want to have a USFL team, I'm sure Arizona would love to have it. At the time, Arizona didn't have the Arizona Cardinals. So, like, yeah, so they basically the other three sports teams said, no, we aren't going to let them use a field. And the field that they were going to use, that the Padres, and I forget the name of the soccer team, that soccer team was trying to, you know, it's owned by a government municipality. So they were renters in it. And they're like, well, if you also rent to these people, we won't rent from you because the field will be crap. And anyways, but yes, that happened. And you can look it up. This ruling came down June 15th, 1983. So I'm not just making things up about the USFL. I want to do that. So that's this week on the USFL history brought to you by Carnival Personnel.
Yeah, so San Diego said, go fuck yourself, USFL.
Well done, sir. Well done. Now, before we get into the too fucking bad show, the bit isn't going anywhere, you're stuck doing the random video game review of the week per our vast fans.
That was like existence. Reagan Mondale. Like that was like a landslide victory.
It really was.
For the random video game review.
But before we go, I sent I should have sent it to our friend Robert too, a 1/6 scale model. It was at a video conference, I think E3 trade show. They just launched 1/6 working. They actually work, but they are desk versions about the size of this mic and mic stand of all your favorite classic arcade games. And one of the big things, the guy's like, yeah, but you can get all these games on your phone. And the developer said, ah, but you don't have a trackball, as he was playing Centipede.
Ah, yes. The beloved trackball. So, Robert, if you're listening, we hope to see this in your arcade bar sooner than later. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, please. That's a little request from your friend Joe here at Carnival Personnel. Okay, well, Jacques's going to go take a piss. No, wait. He's moving over, slowly lumbering over, to my video game wall where he may pull a random Nintendo game off the shelf, or he could pull an Xbox game off the shelf, or a GameCube game, or because we've expanded now. But let's see, where did he pull the game off of? I think it's an Xbox game. Then I really don't know. I mean, if it's an original Xbox, it just says Xbox. It's not Xbox 360.
Oh, it's Xbox 360. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then maybe it's, is it Gears of War?
It is Gears of War.
All right. Well, it was next to Gears of War 2 and 3 over there. So I took a stab.
I don't see so good.
Gears of War. This is, I guess, a fantastic franchise because I have the first three games for the Xbox 360, of which I only played maybe half an hour or an hour of Gears of War 1. It's one of those games where it's like up there with Halo as far as popularity goes. Like, it's a great storyline. You were speaking of E3. Epic Games, who publishes this game or develops this game, released like a big, like, 5-minute trailer for Gears of War 5, and it's just being called Gears 5. And people were like, oh my God, it looks awesome. And I couldn't be less interested in it. For now. Maybe when I, you know, get that wonderful, sweet, defunct sponsor money all to myself and I don't have to work another day in my life, I'll have the time to play Gears of War and actually give a proper review. But for those of you salivating over what my thoughts are on Gears of War, it is a good game. It is. It's an rated M game.
You are doing every book report I've ever done through junior high and high school.
Only
right
worse
now.
Because I'm not even reviewing a book that nobody wants to read. You know, I mean, books were boring when we were growing up. I'm actually reviewing a video game that I didn't want to play.
Fun fact: books are still boring.
Oh no. So what else you got there?
No, how much would you pay for it if you didn't already own it?
Oh, Gears of War, that's a very low-priced game. I think you could probably buy it for like $5.
You can buy it for $3.
Yo, say there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's before shipping.
Plus $4 for shipping. All so right, so yeah. $7. $7 out the door. Are you watching anything this week? Anything at all?
Yeah. It's the
Throw it out. Anything at all. Mm-hmm. What are you watching? You have time?
So I'm watching the first half of the fourth season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. It's just a funny fucking show. It's Tina Fey. You probably don't know much about the show, but it's the same ilk as 30 Rock. I think I talked about this a year ago. I watched
the pilot, and my anxiety wouldn't let me watch anymore.
Oh, no, it's funny.
The opening is awesome.
Oh, the opening is fantastic, yes. And they've kept the opening throughout all of the seasons. But, you know, John Hamm is in it. You have Ellie Kemper. Yes, Ellie Kemper. And there's a guy by the name of who else cares? But 6 weeks later, it was Wake Up Little Susie. That's what I'm watching. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. Jacques, what are you wasting your time on?
Actually, this week, work, and that really sucks.
Ew.
We have a home game, and it's a big military game, so we're honoring a lot of vets, so there's a lot of scripting. We literally have like a dozen different vets doing different things in the game that we're... So I haven't really had time to watch too much. However, and I don't know why, because I've been in the other side of the room, so I've kind of been watching it. My oldest one, for some reason, was watching it before management came home the other night, and then we all watched it together. Was it 2009 Willy Wonka remake?
Oh, with Johnny Depp.
I liked it. I mean, we saw it when it came out in the movie theater, and we liked it. Loved it? No, but liked it, you know?
It's all right. It has Christopher Lee in it.
There's a little gag in it that's like one of my favorite thing in movies, and it's one of those things that it's a little in joke that management and I now use at the beginning of it when people come into the Wonka factory. There's this animatronic like kind of puppet show, and there's a chair behind there where everybody thinks that, you know, the chair comes up out of the floor and all the puppets are singing this great song about how Willy Wonka is so great, and then all of a sudden one of them starts to short circuit and they all like catch on fire, and they went from cheering to being mortified, and then all of a sudden he's still cheering, like you know, in the background. He's like, "Yay, yay!" And they're like, "Well, wasn't that fantastic?" Well, up until the very end, and they're like, "Well, why aren't you in the chair?" He goes, "Well, I wouldn't be able to see the show from there, would I?" And so then later he's giving the tour of the chocolate factory, and it's almost like a throwaway gag. They go by a room, and the puppets are now being like bandaged up and fixed. And he's like, "That's a puppet burn unit. It's fairly new." But so we watched that. But then, and again, I don't know if with our cable, there's a button on the thing and you can just talk into it and ask for a movie to come up. And the oldest one just decided, I want to watch the old Willy Wonka. So we watched that whole thing last night.
That's one of my favorite movies. It's got to be top 10, maybe top five.
There was a window. There was a good... I mean, we're talking a 7-8 year window where Gene Wilde, and you think about that. You think about the window that Matt Damon has had and George Clooney has had, and you go down the list, or before that, you know, Clark Gable and all these leading men in 100 years of filmmaking.
Yep, Jimmy Stewart and all those guys.
Yeah. Mostly really good looking guys. Gene Wilder doesn't fall into that category, but yet. I mean, he does The Producer. He does Blazing Saddles. He does Willy Wonka. I mean, these absolutely iconic...
Young Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Sorry. He wasn't a fantastic singer, but he could hold his own.
Right. But again, up into a certain era, and I think he is the last of his ilk, where you couldn't be an actor. You couldn't be an actor. You had to sing. You had to dance.
It was like the early 70s, late 60s sort of thing where you had to have a triple threat thing.
I mean, there are the Matthew Brodericks and stuff like that. And you can go, yes, there are the Neil Patrick Harrises. There are those. But up until that point, everybody before, you know, could be in a musical. Mm-hmm. You know, could be. I mean, when you think the Dick Van Dyke and stuff like that, it's like.
John Wayne. Okay, maybe. Yeah, see?
Well, but we don't know. He could have been a fantastic dancer. I mean, his first name was Marion. I mean, he probably was a fantastic dancer. But no, so we watched it. And again, it is one of those movies where I'm watching it and I'm thinking, okay, so this is 72. So I'm 3. Man, it came out before management was born. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, it's dated, but it's still so great.
It was produced by the Quaker Oats people. Because they wanted to start producing candies. And they used the movie as a promotion for their new Wonka line of candies, which was a real thing. However, there was a problem with the formula for the new Wonka bars that they actually sold in stores. After sitting on the shelves for a couple of weeks, they started to melt. They did not have a long shelf life. So the Wonka bars went away.
Like our podcast.
See? But the Wonka movie lived forever. So, yeah, I love that movie. Jesus, I could do a sideshow on that, but I won't.
No, we will, because I have that in the notes to talk about. I listen to Kevin Smith and other people, because people want to hear their thoughts on certain kind of movies. I think, so we have an excuse to watch more movies together, mm-hmm. we should live commentary as we watch movies.
Ooh.
And I know a lot of people do that. Now, we can go down the list.
But I'm not talented enough to do that. I'll just end up watching the movie, and you'll hear 70 minutes of silence. Which is a good thing.
How do I put this? Hi, my name's Jacques. Have we met? What do you think? And when I sleep at night, there's 70 minutes of silence. You know me for close to 30 damn years.
Your pillow's like, shut up, shut up, shut up.
Like, honestly, it's like I can't even have pillowcases because they just leave. You know? They just leave. But I did, you know, because I went back and forth. It's like, and I do. I implore, if we have people listening, other than just me listening, right, you know, today.
Three times.
But hey, at least I listen on three different devices.
That's so hard. Gotta bump up those numbers.
Bump up those numbers. But if we got three people say, hey, you guys suck, but give it a try and suggest a movie, and I would suggest it has to be before like 1990. Let's start with like an old movie.
Okay.
You know, because the funny thing is, it also came up in conversation. I still haven't seen Three Fugitives.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of management's favorite movies that neither you or I had heard about it.
I vaguely remember the trailer when you were describing it.
And it's like, Martin Short is so great. But I want to get back to the Willy Wonka, because honestly, it's 1972, and it hit me. It's like, because I've always loved Gene Wilder, and it's like, you know, and his marriage and stuff like that. It was, I mean, they were amazing. But you think about that guy and his hair, and he's not like built or anything like that, but he was for a good 6, 7, 7, 8 year window. He was it.
If you shaved, you could pull off a Gene Wilder. If you got the purple top hat and the bow tie.
Yeah, I probably could.
Oh, I'm looking at Halloween 2018, baby.
And I love when it's one of my favorite things when he slowly walks out with a cane. Slowly walks out and the crowd is hushed and then he does it.
Just let it. And then he tumbles
and
falls.
Tumbles and ta-da!
Yay!
And I don't...
We are the music makers.
I don't...
And we are the dreamers of dreams.
You lose. You get nothing.
You stole fizzy lifting drinks. You bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sanitized. So you lose. You get nothing. Good day, sir. You're a crook. You're a swindler, a cheat. How dare you build up a little boy's dreams and smash them all to pieces. You're an inhuman monster. I said good day. Come on, Charlie. Let's go. If Slugworth wants his gobble-lapsing gobstopper, we'll give it to him. And then he comes back and he puts the candy on his desk. And he says, Mr. Wonka, and he places it down. And then you see Willy Wonka's hand slowly envelop the candy left behind by Charlie. And you hear Mr. Wonka say, so shines a good deed in a weary world.
I'm almost in tears. I mean, literally, this moment of self-indulgent theater was brought to you by rice cereal. But seriously, I love when you just randomly go into self-indulgent theater. I kind of was leading you down that path, but thank you for walking through that, because that is.
I feel like a little like Mary Catherine Gallagher, you know. I now like to do a scene where I put my fingertips under my armpits and I smell them like that. It's gross. It's really gross. How great is she, Molly Shannon?
Oh!
What?
Okay, hold on.
I just fell back.
We will get back to Molly Shannon in just a second. I got to look up Molly Shannon. Okay. 1 second.
Well, I mean, she was recently on the Cord and Tish thing where they covered the royal wedding.
Yeah, more importantly.
Uh-huh.
More importantly, and I'm going to give this to you.
More importantly, where's the defibrillator so I can, you know, revamp my heart after being shocked to death?
Molly Shannon has a new show shooting now called The Other Two. It's for Comedy Central.
Okay.
And do you know how I know this? My cousin Jimmy is in New York right now shooting an episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that is a flattering image.
Isn't it great? I have no idea what he's playing, but it's...
I want it. Whatever he's selling, I'm buying.
I knew he was coming back to New York for something, and was like, I thought it was another play, and he's like, no, it's in, you know, it's just one episode that he's doing for now. But yeah, when you said Molly Shannon, there you go.
Do you want to give out Jimmy's last name so that?
Yes, and you can follow him on the Twitter, Jimmy Fowlie,
Fowlie,
hysterical. He literally, you know, is hysterical, and I feel bad because I can't help it, but most every time he tweets, it's like, you know, and he's very, very funny. It's like, you know, I'm just trying to think. But he mentions, like, his boyfriend a lot and stuff like that. And every time, I can't help, oh, you sound so gay every time you say my boyfriend, you know. Every time I do it. It's a compulsion. But he's shooting a mirror show. But let's wrap up on my pick of the week is – find it on Netflix or direct. If you haven't seen it, what the fuck is wrong with you?
The 1972 Willy Wonka.
And if you haven't seen it in a while, yeah, it is just, you know, my only one criticism of it, and it's like, that's not what hyperspace looks like moment. It's like, you couldn't get out of bed the last 20 years, Grandpa Joe, and now all of a sudden you go from 20 years laying on your fucking ass while Charlie's out there, you know, slinging papers, and the scene where Charlie has to run home, dude, that's a fucking long way. I mean, that's like a 20-minute scene of him going through the city, then to the suburbs, then to the country where he lives.
You know, Charlie's, I mean, by the way, we're talking about Grandpa Joe getting up out of bed.
Right, all of a sudden.
But, I mean, let's look at Charlie, for example. I mean, he found money in the street. His family is starving, poor. His mother has to wash other people's clothes at night in a vat and sing an awful song. And what does he do with that money? The first thing he does, he runs and buys candy with it. You son of a bitch!
Right, but
that's your college fund!
I mean, he also bought... What did he do with his first pay?
Oh, he bought a bread.
Right, which
we'll have a real banquet.
A real banquet. And then he also got his lazy Grandpa Joe's chew for him. And he's like, no, I'm going to quit doing chew and blah, 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 because we can't afford this. Maybe you can if you get out of that bed. Now, granted, at this point, he probably should be in bed. But what happened that got him into bed 20 years ago? And one of those other sacks of potatoes sitting next to him.
That is the part of the welfare system we don't get to see.
They're talking about a welfare king right there, my friend.
That's right.
But at least you could sing.
Yes. I never thought that I could be anything but catastrophe. But suddenly I begin to see the sun. Anyways, this is not going to become a Willy Wonka sideshow. I'm going to have to edit this down.
No, you will not. Okay. You will not. But if anybody wants to see or listen to us, no one wants to see it. But if anyone wants to listen to us review movies as we watch them, give a shout out. And we don't have a sideshow this week, but we are going to try to do the more, you know, maybe it's, you know, maybe we'll do a Wonka one. We got to have Peter back much sooner than later to do, you know, part two of the cartoons and part one of the Muppets, because you can't do just those.
Hey, we'll just talk about Muppet Show, and then we can do one on, you know, Sesame Street, and one on Muppet Babies.
No, we will not do one on Muppet Babies.
I like Muppet
Babies. You would, but we will do one on the Muppet movies.
Like, of course.
I mean, that movie alone, groundbreaking.
Oh, shit. Yes.
But yeah, so that's it. You got a parenting tip of the week, having been Father's Day. Did anything dawn on you about raising children this past weekend?
Get your drinking done early, because you don't want that hangover to interfere with the parenting the next day. No, I have no parenting tip. You mock me. You know that I have no parenting tips. I don't care.
But the
kids.
So my parenting tip, gotta tread lightly here. I'm going to use a few euphemisms.
What the hell is a ute?
Easy for you to say. So our kids, mostly the oldest one, sometimes he doesn't know there is never a good time to poke the bear. But then there's a couple day window where poking the bear becomes a really bad idea. And I don't know. My parenting tip of the week is, I don't know what it is yet, but I'm getting to the point where I have to start to maybe tell him there's a window where poking the bear goes from being a bad idea to a really bad idea.
Now, what are you referring to?
And maybe we won't stay here on those two to three days every 28 days.
Oh.
Because your crap that normally gets under the bear skin when you're poking it, right now you've taken things to DEFCON 4 and you don't realize why. And yes, it's because you're doing stuff to poke the bear, who isn't going to be as friendly as
Yogi.
Yogi.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a give a picnic basket situation and things work out.
Uh-huh.
So my parenting tip of the week is, you know,
to avoid a boo-boo.
To avoid.
Don't, don't poke Yogi on certain times of the month.
And that's it. That's it for me.
Okay. By the
Follow
way,
that.
You know what's ironic is that doesn't I heard that women's periods attract bears.
Where did you get? How did you draw? I mean, you really? That's what you took out of this, Joseph? You mad?
I'm quoting, of course, Anchorman. I just want to explain.
Oh, you're gonna mansplain?
No, I'm gonna Anchorman-splain.
Fuck you, San Diego.
Go fuck yourself. So yeah, I think that's enough yammering on our part.
Hit us on the Twitter machine or on the Facebook.
Or in real life.
Or in real life. Let us know if you want to review. Give Peter a follow on his YouTube page. He was fantastic. If more people follow him, you know, leave comments on his thing. Maybe he'll come back more. Thank you again, Peter. And on the Twitter, I'm the Jacques Four.
I'm Opti Grabber.
And then there's Carnival Podcast.
On Facebook and on Twitter.
And I think Instagram. I think I signed up that on Instagram so I could follow the pirate
type. I know, right. You'll find nothing of ours there.
Not yet.
I think not with that attitude.
But yeah, no, unless you got anything else.
No, I do. Oh, that one thing. Don't forget.
Charles Nelson Riley was a mighty man, the kind of man you'd never disrespect. He stood 8 foot tall, wore glasses, and he had a third nipple on the back of his neck. He ate his own weight in coal and excreted diamonds every day. He could throw you down a flight of stairs, but you still would love him anyway. Yeah, you know you'd love